Hi, and welcome to this episode of Rule of Carnage. This is a series of conversations found in places like YouTube and podcast providing localities.
It really needs to be a better generalized noun for the place that you consume podcasts. Like, what? How have we got this far into the 21st century without having a name for those?
The podcast...
Podcast listening apparatus.
Yes, the multiple podcast ecology that we are smeared across by our podcast provider, in which myself, Glenn Ford, a game designer and games developer, chats to this splendid person, Micus Hutchinson, also a game designer and developer. And we chat about designing miniatures games, ideally better miniatures games. And we've having a little bit of a chat and a consideration of list building elements and ways of getting list building to work right and pricing things in a way that they sort of shape the meta of your game and leave you design space after having put them in there. And we've been considering, you know, that Mike particularly and many of the games that we've been playing and looking at, and a lot of the independent games are out there at the moment, are miniatures agnostic. Now, when you write list building in a game, you'll often want to divide things out into factions. And one of the ways that's nice to lead a player through a faction is to give them some guideposts to say, oh, well, this faction's hittier than that faction, or this one's shootier, or this one's movie aboutier. And then you want to say, and they're all miniatures agnostic. This list here that's called Mega Brutes, and always wants, you know, punches people's faces right off as soon as they get into them. You can use any miniature for that you like. It's not like you clearly can't. You've clearly got to have a Brutey dude to be your Brutey faction. And how do you deal with offering, you know, robust list building options that fire people's imagination and construct a world for them whilst offering them miniatures agnosticism and saying you can use any old mini you like? Mike, how do you do this?
Yeah, and I think that there's a few angles and questions here which I think come down to some of the design principles that you might or might not realize that you have for the game. And I think one thing that's important is, are you expecting people to manufacture the miniatures for your game, or sort of collect and assemble them for your game, versus are you trying to provide bring the stuff you already have from other games and it's welcome here and you will find a home for it? Because I think there you end up with two potential alternative paths, and I think that they're both valid, but they both have their own sort of special things. And then I suppose it's worth mentioning, like, Hobgoblin that I have written and is available to pre-order from some links below is a game that has never had factions, and it was conceived as a factionless game, and it predates Gaslands. And Gaslands in its original conception was also a factionless game, because it just had a list of vehicle chassis and a bunch of weapons that you could bolt on. And I thought, well, what is more factionless than this post-apocalyptic wastelandy game? And over a bunch of conversations and trying things out, Glenn led me to understand why factions can be useful. And I've written about that in the past on my blog. But the sort of apportioning out of options, I think, it is a separate conversation that we've had somewhere earlier in the channel. But it does beg the question of, like, with Gaslands, it's a much weaker sort of asking you to create models for a specific sort of aesthetic, or to summon a specific kind of a faction. Whereas in a science fiction-y situation, like we've been playing recently with Mars Code Aurora, like, I brought some Infinity miniatures. They had a sort of internal logic because, you know, I understood who they were in the Infinity universe, and they were, you know, they're the Adelph, and they've got kind of AI and cybernetics, and I wanted something that was kind of hackery and, you know, whatever that, you know, something kind of elite and blah blah blah. And so when I came to Mars Code Aurora's faction system, I was sort of pre-processing it with a set of assumptions and trying to find a nice zip up between my headcanon and the sort of rules shape that they've given me. And I think that there's so many places I want to go in this conversation, but one place that is quite common for designers to go, sometimes more aggressively than others, is to say, well, let's take the big factions from a big game that everybody understands, and we'll just go, well, look, okay, here are the Necromunda factions, except I've changed the names, or here are the Warhammer Fantasy armies, but I have changed the names. And that's a perfectly effective way of getting people to understand what your factions are, but obviously it offers some problematic stuff. Whereas the other thing is, like, if you go completely the other direction, you're like, okay, everything is like a special, like, bizarre one-legged, like, sort of space wizards, but they only ride tricycles. It's like, well, there's nothing that fits that, and also it's unlikely that my headcanon for the thing that I was bringing to the game fits that, and so you can't go too specific. You want to guide people. You don't want to straitjacket them. You want to inspire them.
Yeah, and I think you want to sort of, you want to help them out as they start to engage with the game. And I think one of the things about some of those tropes is that they are helpful to people who play these sorts of games. And also it's like, there's a limited number of ways that your army lists can work and come together. You can have the non-elite lots of guys close combat thing, the elite close combat thing, the non-elite shooting thing, the elite shooting thing, and then you need to get quite esoteric. You've got the guys who run really, really fast. And then I need to put in an objective system because I haven't made them hit anything very well, you know. And then it all sort of depends. But those basic tropes are going to be there for most sort of combat games. And it will help people if the massed shooting army isn't high elves or elf looking. Because everyone's going to, what do you mean my elves are the worst shooting army and I need an absolute ton of them? Oh no, if you want an elite, like, long range shooting army, you're going to need the goblins. Everyone's just like, oh no, this is just horrible and feels wrong. And that's never going to sit right in my head.
So tell me how you approach this for Puke Apocalypse, because you're in an interesting spot there where, like, you're attacking this, my understanding from reading it is you're attacking this from the point of view of, like, I want something fairly uniquely flavored. It isn't going to be models you already have, and I'm going to sort of say that up front. And then you chose to provide some faction. So how did you approach that?
Well, that's because that's my version of engaging with kit bashing for people. What I'm trying to do there is engage with that sort of my feelings about the Ink 28 sort of tradition, and going, okay, here is a completely weird, unlike anything else, very flavorful version of a faction, and I'm going to lay it out in a way that you should have a quite distinct taste for who these guys are. And we all know there aren't going to be minis for them, so you're going to have to go and get some clippers and mash something together, and I want you to do that. And then the rules pay back into that by rewarding you for cutting them up and clipping them and affecting them as the game goes on.
And so how many model classifications exist within each of those factions? Like, how much variety are you either asking from players or permitting from players?
Well, there isn't. There's one sort of dude, and then because it's a narrative campaign led system, they change and grow as things goes on. So there's one trooper for.
And so, are you using, in your mind, you're using that sort of, that simplicity and abstraction to basically say, yeah, that means you can literally almost have anything because there's one stat block, like, get over it. Like, models just exist in this game.
Yeah. There's a group of guys that fit this generalized description, and then just make five of them and have fun doing it and then move on from there.
Because I think one thing, I really enjoyed Mars Code Aurora, and I'm looking forward to playing it some more. But one thing that struck me as I was approaching their model agnostic generic faction system is that I've got a list of like eight dudes that I can choose from, eight kind of classifications of dudes, which were a shade on the specific side, and then they had specific loadouts, and that struck me as odd. Like the fact that the sort of basic soldier in the faction that I chose had like two or three gun choices, that felt to me like an interesting design decision, given that like it seems to be suggesting that I could bring anything from a rogue trader orc to a modern infinity miniature, you know, to something I've kitbashed completely from my bits box. And in order to support all of that, like, you know, the miniature agnostic game that I've been working on in the shadows, and, you know, I talked a bit about on this channel and probably won't go anywhere, which is like a Ink 28 meets Malifaux. Like, I broke down all of the Malifaux abilities and made them buyable so that you can basically assemble literally any weapon that I can think of, you can put onto the model, because I have seen all of the variety of, you know, Blanchitsu models, and there's literally no end of arms and guns and whatnot. So I think Mars Code Aurora strikes an interesting balance between like having control over its own faction system, with the possible downside of being like, oh, but I needed a sniper rifle and this faction doesn't have a sniper rifle in it.
Yeah, and I think that what this comes down to is sort of the different definitions of what miniatures agnostic might be and what you mean by it in various sort of moments and places. Because I think that what Mars Code Aurora is doing is going, okay, look, here's the brute faction, here's the tech faction. Now, they'll have things that make sense for what you think might attach to tech and what might attach to brute. And then get some minis that look like brutes or look like tech guys, and these things will fit together. But you can't have every gun in the world, and you can't have every weapon in the world, because what I mean by miniatures agnostic is, I'm not going to tell you like which weapon, which gun is the sniper rifle and which gun is the heavy laser and which thing is a power fist and which thing is a death claw or whatever it happens to be. But I'm going to say this is a general bucket for the guys who run up and punch you really hard in the head.
And they're only allowed these things. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a general bucket for the guys who shoot you at range. And this is a general bucket for the guys who are a bit more numerous. And you listen to me saying punch you in the head or a bit more numerous, and then go and define that for yourself. That's where I'm offering you the miniatures agnosticism versus the version of miniatures agnosticism, which is close your eyes, put your hand into a bucket of miniatures, pull a thing out. Yeah, you can use that.
Right. And that's essentially what Hobgoblin offers. And actually, like, oddly enough, with a couple of specific exceptions, it's kind of how Gaslands offers it as well, because the faction variety basically exists in software space, and it's like the perks that the drivers have which aren't represented, it's the special rules that the sponsors give you that aren't represented. Like, with it, again, with a few exceptions, you can basically build any chassis and put any guns on it, and it will function in any faction. So, like, the miniatures that you build for Gaslands don't lock you out, or like the faction that you choose doesn't force specific miniatures to be pushed away. Whereas Mars Code Aurora is a little bit more restrictive in terms of like, yes, I'm gonna be very free. You are very free to select your general class of models, but then when we get right down to building a squad, I'm going to need you to need about this many models, and they're going to need to this spread of weapons, and these three basic troopers are going to have two classes of weapon that look broadly the same, or you're going to have to be very, very careful in explaining to your opponent which ones are what.
Yeah. And I think there's a really interesting, to me anyway, sort of meeting of miniatures agnostic and what you see is what you get. And where those two sort of mesh up within the requirements of your system. Because it's not necessary that a miniatures agnostic game should not be a WYSIWYG game, because it's like, well, you can use any miniature you like, but it's got to look like it's got a blah, blah gun. And you can find that blah, blah gun from wherever you like, but I want you to signal to your opponent.
Right, like a fantasy or low-tech skirmish game, like you know, Open Combat or, you know, Saga could easily have a list of weapons that were like, well, this is a spear, this is a broadsword. Like, we all agree what's a spear and what, like, these are historically provable definitions. And then it's like, well, it has to be WYSIWYG with the weapon that you've got. It's harder, you know, you could do that with a modern game as well. It's harder with, like, well, it has to be a plasma gun. Well, what even is that? Like, it's not even a thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Fantasy and historic give you a lot of leeway in that. And I think we were playing Warlords of Erewhon, which has a system which is sword, big sword, bloody big sword. And then it and it can be a sword or an axe or a hammer, and it's a one.
Right, which is actually much less helpful than maybe, like, you know, having a sort of, like, you know, a short sword, a two-handed sword, and a you know, a great sword or something, and then, like, defining within those categories, like, the historical block of swords, I mean, my great swords are these things, and you'd be like, okay, right, I've got a really clear idea of what a WYSIWYG model with a great sword might look like.
Sure, but that is, I think, certainly an attempt to be miniatures agnostic and WYSIWYG by going, you know, the length of the, if it's that big.
Oh, I see. Right.
If it's,
yeah,
that big, it's that sword. And if it's that big, it's that sword. And now it's WYSIWYG and it's miniatures agnostic, because it can be a sword or a hammer. So long, yes, as it's, you know, an inch longer than the other one, we've achieved both of those things. And I think sometimes what some systems mean by miniatures agnostic is not WYSIWYG. It's just not WYSIWYG. And other than that, you know, whatever, that sort of absolves me of being sort of that's my miniatures agnostic sort of credentials. And I don't think it's necessarily true that the two don't sort of interact. And I think I'm quite a fan of some degree of WYSIWYG, just because models can have utility at the tabletop. They can offer a lot of information. And not asking some level of WYSIWYG is sort of just throwing, it's leaving money on the table in design terms. You know, it's throwing away one of the primary user interface elements that these games come with. These games are basically saying, would you please spend multiple hours and a significant amounts of money signaling by a panoply of models across the table information to your opponent that they will then be able to intuit naturally without even need to look at a rule book, and then being fully miniatures agnostic is going, yeah, I don't want any of that. That doesn't seem like something that's useful for the play experience or beneficial to my game. And it's a bit like, wow, that's like a hell of a thing to just dump out and go, nah, not worried about that.
No, it's absolutely fair. I mean, like, the reason I have done it in Hobgoblin is absolutely crystal clear to me, which is, I want to sever the hobby and the gameplay in a fundamental way, so that you can hobby all you like and you can gameplay all you like, and those things can change and you can enjoy the loops within them without necessarily getting tangled up together. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And, like, to a degree in Hobgoblin, I think there's likely to be a social pattern by which players who play each other more than once will understand each other's shared language about what unit classes are, each kind of unit classes. It probably won't go as far as, like, what special rules those units have been given. But to a degree, I'm sort of using the inherited WYSIWYG of other fantasy systems, where, like, if you know what a block of goblins does in Warhammer Fantasy Battle, and the other guy has chosen to basically replicate that rule set in Hobgoblin so that you can play the same game but much faster, then, you know, there's information transference, but it's sort of outside the will of the designer of this game. It's a social construct.
I think it's interesting, and I think this is a thing that constantly interests me about, like, about our sort of design relationship is,
well, and also like, what's the point of miniatures?
Well, yeah, is that you are much happier to abstract things than me, and you are much more interested in miniatures than me. I think sort of generally, which feels like a weird thing. It's almost like I need the miniatures to not be abstracted because I don't have the inherent interest in the hobbying that you do. You know, possibly because I have a lot more painted miniatures than you, so I've just thrashed that out of myself over years of doing, like, 19 Warhammer Fantasy Battle armies. But it is interesting, like, that in relation to Hobgoblin, the Hobgoblin says over and over and over again that these unit types are abstractions. They're name tags that I've chosen to pin to something to give you a ballpark idea of what they are going to do. But that's me calling it a chariot to you to help you understand what they are. Do not feel tied to a chariot. And also, don't feel tied to needing to make it look like a chariot to give your opponent the same benefit.
Right, and it's the same with Gaslands chassis. It's like people come to Gaslands and like, well, where does a small car go? And people go, it doesn't matter. Run it as a car, run it as a buggy. No one cares. It's fine.
Yeah.
Pick the stat block you want.
And it's where those lines are going to go across and where people are going to react to them. Because people don't like a chariot being anything other than a chariot. And they don't, they're reacting to that in a sort of quite visceral way, I found in the Discord. And a number of times I've had to say, like, okay, just because it's called light infantry doesn't mean it's light infantry. Just because it's called light cavalry doesn't mean it's dudes on horseback, you know, riding around. And getting people over that sort of hump of, but it's called this in the rule book. The rule book is canon, and that means that that's what it is. And it's like the rule book very carefully says to you, please, I'm giving you a shorthand with the words like cavalry. It can be it can be harpies. It can be, you know, this, it could be the other. It could be like, okay, I want flying shooting things, but I don't want to pay for flying. Well, fast cavalry move pretty quickly and they shoot, so my fast cavalry have got wings, but they don't fly. They don't actually fly, and that's okay. And getting people to get into that abstracted mindset, I think, is sort of, it's an interesting thing to be going through at the moment, I found.
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's funny because, like, to hear you say it out loud, I basically sort of high-five it, which is like, you said, like, I'm much happier for games to abstract the place of the miniature in the game, but I'm much more interested potentially in miniatures. And I think I think one does lead to the other in that, like, I want miniatures to have a power and a freedom and a flexibility so that the investment I make in a little object pays multiple dividends, and that the investment that I make in a miniature is never minimized by the game systems. And so where I find myself feeling constricted in my extraction of value from a given miniature by a published rule system, and my first instinct is to go write another game and just be like, right, well, I'm going to make a game where the value is more easily extractable.
Yeah, I suppose so.
More variedly.
And it's, you know, and it's a matter of personality, because it's like, if the game isn't actually attaching the value to the actual miniature that I physically got in my hand, I feel like, well, it hasn't offered me value for this miniature. It's right. Offered me value for any old random blob that I stick onto a base. You've said you were going to offer me extra value, and you just didn't. You sort of lied, and you went, oh, it doesn't really matter whether you've got that lovely mini or not. What you could do is you could put that lovely in a mini next to the table and look at it and enjoy looking at it, and then just use bits of cardboard and piles of, like, you know.
But then there wouldn't be a little bit of cinematography, there wouldn't be a little bit of, like, you know, miniature diorama developing in front of you.
All the cinematography is happening in your mind anyway. You're not imagining those stiff single pose things sliding magically across the table to each other.
But you take a still image with your mind. You get down there and you look, and it's a little. Yeah. Anyway, it's super interesting. So yeah, providing factions in a miniature agnostic game, like, I feel strongly that, you know, you need to find in your design principles, in your heart, what you want from the game. Like, are you guiding players to a specific set of fairly, like, clear endpoints that they need to bring a certain kind of miniature or create a certain kind of miniature? Are you inspiring them to go to a place that you're excited to bring them to? Or are you trying to offer a very, very open table where it's like, hey, the doors are swinging open, this is a really, like, flexible place? And if that is your goal, like, look for the places where you are accidentally restricting people too much, or you're fighting their imagination by bringing, like, maybe a slightly overly specific faction idea. Like maybe you're excited about something and that darling kind of needs to be killed because it's too weird or it's too restrictive or it's too specific. And I guess a lot of this is showing it to people and having those little moments of disappointment where they try and bring, you know, they try and bring the little warband that they wanted to bring and they ask, oh, well, cool, how do I get a flamethrower in this? And you're like, oh, well, you can't. And, you know, examining those kinds of moments of playtester disappointment.
And I think, yeah, consider sort of how the WYSIWYG and the social contract interact with each other when people come to the table and want to be able to read intuitively what they're facing.
Yeah, and whether you're going to be opinionated about that in your rule system and clearly communicate that opinion.
So I'm sure that a lot of people watching this video have played a miniatures agnostic game that had a faction system to it, and it either gelled perfectly with the miniature agnosticism that was occurring, or it was too restrictive, or it was too loose, or it was a Goldilocks faction system was just right. If you have dropped down in that comment section below where I am talking from, and tell us about that system. Tell us about why it worked for you, why it magically managed to find the imagination within your head where you were creating these things and somehow lock into it like a jigsaw puzzle. And tell us where this witchcraft occurred, because we'd like to see some more of that going on. And if something you were playing claimed to be miniatures agnostic and just absolutely jammed up and you couldn't get anything out of it, and no matter what you did, you couldn't picture it in any way other than sort of the single version they'd laid it out, tell us about that as well. While you're telling us about it in the comment section, hit yourself a like and subscribe. Swing over to the Discord and tell us about it again in there. But for now, from this additional ongoing conversation about miniatures agnosticism, it's going to be a thank you and goodbye. So thank you and goodbye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.